From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Quick reminder that the Latin Grammy Awards make their New York debut with megastars like Colombian singer Shakira and the Mexican band RDB Go. We are having a special on Soundcheck today. The results and a Latin Grammy preview. You can even go to the homepage of WNYC.org and cast your vote for Song of the Year. Then tune into Soundcheck at 2 this afternoon on 93.9 WNYC. Now, the results of lab experiments conducted on mice are usually confined to science journals and maybe make it into the Science Times. But this morning, such a story made the front page of the New York Times and the Washington Post and probably other papers around the country. Why? Because the study, which involved giving mice high doses of a substance found in red wine, I mean really high doses, and too much food, seems to offer a way for us to have our cake and eat it too, or eat whatever we want without suffering any bad health effects. To talk more about the study and what it might someday mean for human beings, I am joined by Stephen Helfand, professor of molecular, cellular biology, biochemistry as well at Brown University, and Dr. Howard Eisenson, the director of the Duke University Diet and Fitness Center. Welcome both of you to WNYC.
Thank you. It's nice to be with you.
Thank you very much.
Professor Helfand, you study the molecular effects of aging in your lab, and I understand you reviewed this study prior to its publication. Can you walk us through the study, what it has to do with drinking wine, and its results?
I'm not quite sure about wine, but I'll do the best I can to walk you through. I think the overall take-home message here, and it can be quite limited in some way or qualified, is that the health of severely overfed mice can be dramatically improved by, in this case, the feeding of a fairly high dose of what they call a small molecule called resveratrol, which is, as you've already indicated, found in red wine and a lot of other places. So when a mouse is fed this very high-calorie fat diet, there is a variety of pathologies that are associated with it, such as liver damage, cardiac damage, metabolic dysfunctions, glucose metabolism problems, insulin, diabetes. And this paper shows...
Just like people who severely overeat.
Severely, though. And in this case, when they were feeding these mice this substance, it reversed most, if not all, of these untoward effects of severe overweight, and also suggested that the direction that things are changing is similar to what someone might see in what they call a calorie-restricted condition.
Calorie-restricted condition, which we talked about just earlier this week in that study that they did on monkeys where they severely restricted their calories, I mean, such that any human who tried to follow that diet would wind up severely emaciated, although the study indicates would live a long time.
And yeah, I'm not entirely sure that that's well understood yet. I don't think the survivorship data is all quite done, but there might be some shifts towards benefits.
Right. So let me ask you. Dr. Eisenson, to apply this mice study as much as it can be to humans, because as Dr. Helfand has indicated, what they tested on mice, which you can test on mice and you can't test on people, is giving them severely exacerbated diet, so much overeating, and then tested so much resveratrol that it would be the equivalent of 300 glasses of wine a day. So how do we draw any relevance to human beings?
Well, I think you're making I guess what I'd like to say is I compliment you on doing the program, because I think there is a danger of human beings looking at a study like this and drawing totally dangerous conclusions about how to apply this to their own lives. This was a study that was done in laboratory animals using I didn't know how the dose of resveratrol corresponded to amount of alcohol, but if it's obviously, it would be crazy for anybody to consume large amounts of alcohol trying to gain health benefits. They'd gain many more disadvantages. But even if there is available or could be available concentrated forms of resveratrol,
they're working on a pill, basically.
Yeah. Well, even if there is a pill, we still have to learn a whole lot more before we know that this translates into benefit to human beings.
Dr. Helfand?
Well, sure, one can always say that, and I completely agree. I think the point that we're trying to make here and that the study's trying to make is that there are a number of caveats, of course. The lifespan of these mice is not finished, and the question is, of course, it improves the health of a severely overfed mouse. Will it improve the health of a mouse that's on a normal diet? Of course, many of my colleagues have already pointed out it's not clear that the American public is necessarily on what one might call a normal diet. So there could even in those cases be benefits if it was appropriate. It's clearly way too soon to advocate human doses, but the resveratrol has been around for a while, and at least to my knowledge, there aren't knowledgeable significant problems with it. I completely agree that it's not clear whether this is going to translate to improving the life and the health of a normally fed mouse or a human. On the other hand, it does tell us a lot about that basic science may work, and the excitement that I have is the proof in principle that this particular drug, resveratrol, improves the health and the lifespan of diverse organisms such as yeast, worms, flies, fish, and now, in this case, an obese mouse. So the fact is that it's a pretty diverse group of different organisms. If it works in all of them, it may have benefits in humans. Whether it has negative side effects, only time will tell.
Listeners, we can take a few calls on this. Maybe you've read it in one newspaper or another, or online today, or heard it on the air. If you have a question about the study or its implications, our guests might have some insight. But would you take a pill that could let you eat whatever and not worry about your health? Of course you would. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Of course, you'd probably never get another seat on the subway since everyone would take up two spaces. But what are the implications of a pill like that? Your questions about the study, 212-433-9692. And I guess that's really it, Dr. Helfand, isn't it? It's not that this resveratrol helps the mice to lose weight. It's that they can actually be severely overweight, but without the normal effects that we would expect, like on the cardiovascular system.
Yeah, I think that is a bit confusing at this point as to why they actually don't lose the weight as well. You probably would have expected them to. But yes, you're right. They seem to have the benefits. Now, whether, as Dr. Eisenman indicated, what we're talking about is a severely pathological condition of marked obesity that's being cured or treated, versus are we really talking about someone who's slightly overweight that could be benefit from this? That's not clear at this point. And I think the authors of the paper, not surprisingly, are working on that as well, but it'll be a while before anybody hears from them.
Right. So Dr. Eisenson, as head of the famed Diet Center at Duke University, I would expect your patients will be asking you about this.
Sure. I think everybody's interested in it. I agree with all of Dr. Helfand's points, and I think this is interesting research. The findings are fascinating, and hopefully they will lead to further study that will be applicable to our treatment of human beings. So this is the way research progress is made. You start in the laboratory, and then you very carefully, methodically move to studies in humans.
Patrice in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Patrice.
Yes, hi. I was a medical student. I was accepted to Meharry and NYU conditionally. I wanted to ask, in regards to that substance that they've been studying with mice, is that substance similar to Demerol, which is soluble in water, having a neutral reaction and an analgesic, similar to that of morphine, which can lead to addiction? Have they found a similarity?
Dr. Helfand?
I'm not sure that I'm an expert on this, but I think there's no similarity that I know of whatsoever.
I wouldn't think so either.
All right. Thank you, Patrice. And do we know that this study shows that the resveratrol slowed aging, or did it just undo some of the effects of obesity? Is that a meaningful difference?
Yeah, that is a meaningful difference. Two things. Is it changing pathological conditions that are associated with aging itself? which actually isn't such a bad thing to fix too, or is it actually, as you say, slowing the rate of aging? I don't think we know the answer to that question at all, and in order to do that kind of a study, you need to have markers that tell you that this animal on this treatment is aging at a different rate than this animal not on this treatment. And I don't think they've done that, but they have looked at markers that co-segregate or correlate with aging, and the markers they looked at all seem to show that it's markedly improved in the resveratrol fed animals.
Kathleen in Greenwich, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kathleen.
Hello. I was wondering if you could explain what the common detriments to excessive alcohol consumption and specifically wine are, and how they are somehow erased if you're an overfed mouse.
Well, it is funny, Dr. Eisenson, that one of the effects of this resveratrol was supposed to be that it reduces liver damage, when one of the effects of drinking too much alcohol is that it creates liver damage.
Right. Well, resveratrol is not alcohol.
Right. It's a substance in wine.
Right. It's a substance in wine. So it's very important to do as you're doing and make that distinction. There are a lot of health risks associated with certainly more than moderate consumption of alcohol. There is some legitimate discussion in medicine about whether moderate amounts of alcohol have sufficient advantage for heart health.
Do you recommend it? Do you have an opinion on that? And in fact, have you studied the red wine French diet at Duke? Could these be connected? That's why the French seem to be able to eat a fatty diet and have low rates of heart disease?
I haven't done any research on that, and I don't know. I don't feel qualified to answer that that particular question.
Dr. Helfand?
Well, I would say that this is quite alarming to me that people are thinking that they're talking about alcohol. They're talking about resveratrol, which you can get in a number of different compounds. I think pomegranate juice has a much higher level than wine does.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Resveratrol.
In fact, on your subway system and in the New York train stations, there are those signs for POM that
yes.
I used to say, you know, cheat death, drink. That's resveratrol they're talking about. They're calling it an antioxidant, which it is. But if you go online and you look about those things, they claim to have more resveratrol in pomegranate juice than in wine. Now, I don't know about whether that's still enough anyway to do it. But this seems extremely alarming that people are I mean, unfortunately, the word wine and alcohol is used, but that, I believe, the authors are not in the slightest bit intended to imply that people should be drinking large quantities of wine. And actually, Eisenman had already indicated, I think, that a lot of alcohol is clearly not a good thing.
Right, though there does seem to be study after study that indicates some alcohol is a pretty good thing, at least for your cardiovascular system.
That's correct. But even given that information, the medical establishment is wisely very cautious about encouraging people to start drinking. If they're not already drinking, in fact, most of us would not encourage people to start drinking. If they are already drinking in moderation, and if we're honest about what moderation is, then there may indeed not be a medical reason for them to stop
drinking.
Right,
and but they say, what, 4 or 5 drinks a week, something like that.
I think that the other thing, I don't know if this is confusing you, but there are sometimes obvious confounds in these studies. In other words, these are epidemiological or demography studies.
Right. I want to get to one. We just have 30 seconds left.
Sure.
And how important is it to mention that this resveratrol study's main author is involved with, I guess, one of those biotech firms that's working on a resveratrol supplement? Is this marketing or is this science, or can we pick the two apart?
I think a conflict of interest always has to be examined carefully. I think on the author's side is that this is not coming from his lab alone. You look at the, I can't even remember, is it 27 authors, many of which are at premier institutions, including the national government at the National Institute of Health.
And that has to be the last word on this for today. Really interesting. I think we cleared up probably some misconceptions that people had from just reading the headline. Dr. Eisenson, Dr. Helfand, thank you both very much.
You're very welcome.
Thanks very much.
Nuala McGovern produces this program with Jim Colgan, Priya George, and Lisa Allison. We had help from Spencer Wilking today. That's Bill O'Neill at the audio controls. I'm Brian Lehrer. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.